is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey Hoopheads, this April our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are offering a huge $3,000 discount with a trade-in of any model in any condition. And they'll knock off $3,000 when you trade in one of their competitors' machines too. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com. Follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT Plus models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Clint Pulver, the author of I Love It Here, and you are listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. And
I'm back, Mike.
Welcome back. Welcome back, I think, is the first. That's the first thing. Welcome back from the land of Disney.
Oh, yeah. The land of the mouse, man. The land of the mouse.
Mike, you survived? You look like you're still intact.
Still intact. I'm awake today. A little better than yesterday, but I'm awake.
forced me to do my 26-minute monologue and then ended up with a staticky recording that I had to put out. So I apologize to anyone who listened to that episode. If you slogged your way through that last night or this morning, thank you for listening to my 26 minutes. You'll probably hear us repeat some of the points that I made, hopefully with better audio quality. Jason and I are also trying out a new platform tonight. So we've been with Cast before. Now we're trying out Riverside FM. So we'll check this out and see how it goes. And who knows, maybe we'll end up going with Riverside, but we're going to test it out. We also got some video capability now, Jay. We can actually see each other again.
Yeah, you're going to have to keep me. I'm going to have to be on task here. Like, I have to focus on the camera.
I'm going to know when you walk out when I'm talking for 6 minutes and you disappear. I'm not going to know what to do.
My kids
I thought he was listening.
My kids start to cry or something. You know,
Maybe we'll get the dog on camera finally. So
just hopefully he's not rolfing in the background like he was a few weeks ago.
Hopefully not. Let's hope not.
All right. Anyways,
I'm going to say no.
Behind the scenes goings on. Mike, just so you know, as we're recording tonight, it is currently almost midnight. And Minnesota and Denver are currently in the third quarter. It is a tie game with 3 minutes left. So as the game's going on, we'll keep you up to date and our thoughts and ideas of what's going on. Edwards has gone off in the third quarter here. So we'll see if it continues. But before we begin, we've been doing win shares all year, and we still never did the Cavs. I'll save that for the summer. But I'm going to pick a different stat every week. And we're going to talk about career playoff leaders for stats, okay? Since we're in the playoffs now, we're going to start with points. I feel like this should be the easiest, Mike. I want you to get. I've got the top 12 pulled up. I want you to give me the top 5 points
playoff points,
and it's NBA and ABA combined.
All right, so LeBron is number one.
That is correct.
Jordan is number two.
That is correct.
Kareem, I'm guessing, is in the top five.
He's number three.
All right, so I've got the top three. Now I would guess it probably gets a little bit harder because we're looking at the normal guesses of guys who maybe were around – a little bit earlier, before our lifetime.
such as Wilt, didn't play enough rounds. So Wilt is not going to be on there because of just the fact that
Wilt is a playoff player. Correct. That's correct. Wilt is not on the list.
So I'm going to go,
When I'm looking at the rest of this list, I only see two what I would call old school players.
Right. So number four.
Remaining. Two old school players remaining.
Okay. So I'll go with number four. It has to be somebody who perennially made the playoffs, somebody who went and made deep playoff runs year after year after year. I know it's not Steph, but I'm going to say Steph.
He's not in the top 12.
Not in the top 12. Okay. Is there anybody currently active who's in the top five?
No.
Besides the guy? No. No, these guys are not active.
One of the guys is actively on your TV screen often.
Reggie Miller.
No, he's not on the list. No. He's on
Charles Barkley?
Shaq. Shaq is number five. Shaq is number five. Okay, Mike.
Shaq, number five.
Okay, Mike, let's make a connect. Kobe's number four.
All right.
Okay, do you want to take a stab at anyone else that's on the list, Mike? Do you want to take a stab at it, or should I just tell you?
Let me think. Where was I going? I got to think about where I was going before.
Come on. Big fundamental.
Duncan, yeah.
Duncan, six.
Kind of surprising that I guess he didn't have as big of monster scoring.
He wasn't doing like 30 points a game. He was scoring like, you know, consistently.
Right. 25, right? Yeah. Just more consistently.
Yeah.
Magic didn't score enough to get onto the list, I wouldn't think. Bird didn't have a long enough career.
You got to go further. There's two guys further back than that. There's one guy who's currently active in the NBA.
Dr. J.
Dr. J is number nine.
That's mostly from the ABA, I would guess. I mean, he played a lot in the playoffs in the NBA, but obviously only won one title with the Sixers. So a lot of his playoff totals, I'm sure, are ABA totals. Karl Malone?
Karl Malone is number seven on the list. One current NBA player, right. Mike. You're currently anti him.
Kevin Durant.
Kevin Durant is number eight on the list. Okay. They've got three players remaining. One of them, is the logo.
Jerry West.
Number 10. One of them was a teammate of Tim Duncan.
David Robinson?
No. He was married to Eva Longoria.
Tony Parker is on that list?
Number 11, baby. Tony Parker.
Wow. That's surprising to me. I mean, Tony Parker put up a lot of numbers. I guess he played a lot with one team that got there. So I guess that makes sense. But that's a surprising name to me.
And number 12 is a part owner of the Utah Jazz.
Danny Ainge?
Played with LeBron.
Dwayne Wade.
Dwayne Wade. There you go. So that's points.
Wade's a little bit surprising too.
Do you like this game, Mike? I like this game. I'm gonna pick a different one. Larry Bird, by the way, is 13. By the way, and Havlicek is 14. Okay. Hakeem is 15. And Magic Johnson 16. Steph Curry is 19, so he'll inevitably get there. James Harden is 22.
James Harden, look at that. Playoff scoring.
Kawhi Leonard is currently tied with Dan Issel for 30th.
Okay.
So.
Well, that's quite a list. Interesting. I mean, clearly, there are always things that are strange that just because of a guy's longevity or where he played. I think the Tony Parker one is the name that jumps out at you that doesn't necessarily fit.
Okay, so you know Julius Erving's in the top 10, okay? He scored majority of his points in the NBA, by the way. The number one all-time scorer in the ABA playoff is Roger Brown.
Roger Brown. Nice.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
All right. So
I don't know if I'd recognize Roger Brown if he walked down the street.
I know there was a guy named Roger Brown that used to be a column reporter for the Cleveland Plain Dealer. I didn't like him ever. So.
Okay. Yeah, I remember that guy. Yeah, I remember that guy. Right. Yeah, he was like a political reporter, right?
No, well, he was the – no, he did the, yeah, he was terrible. Anyways, well, there you go. So there is a new game for us. So next week you'll have to see what category I pick, Mike. I figured we'd start with points.
And that was a fun one.
It's a fun one. All right.
And that was probably the easiest one. I'm guessing they probably get harder from there.
Possibly. We'll have to see.
Although there may be some overlap in some of the lists.
Yeah, there might. I mean, you would theoretically think like LeBron's probably going to be on a majority of the lists that we talk about.
I would think there's probably a sheer
amount of games he's played in the playoffs. So
correct.
All right, so we're gonna we decided we're gonna split this up and we're gonna do the Eastern Conference first and then move to the Western Conference. So I think it's only right for us to start with the Cavs and the Knicks series. And primarily because we're Cleveland, I'm proudly sporting my Cleveland Guardians attire right now, Mike. I know you're a big Guardians fan. Oh, you got the Cavs shirt on, so I think it's only appropriate that we start talking with Cleveland. So here's what I'm gonna say. Game one, I wasn't super discouraged, and here's why: we played like garbage. The Cavs played like absolute trash, and they lost by 6. They were terrible the whole game. Then they got a really good stretch in the fourth quarter. Obviously, Mitchell. Here's what I'll say, and I think they corrected this in game two, was they were falling back to the we have to rely on Donovan Mitchell all the time situation. And I think they corrected that in game two. The one thing I will say about game two, though, that I was not really thrilled about is early in the game, they clearly wanted to get Garland involved, which is awesome. Great. But he scored like 9 straight points. And what happened? Bickerstaff pulled him out of the game for a substitution. He's on fire. Leave him in the game. Switch up your substitution patterns. You don't have to stay the same, Bickerstaff. This is the playoffs. You got a guy who's cooking. You leave him in the game. What harm does it do if you take Mitchell out first instead of Garland? I don't see what's that. When that happened in the first quarter, it irked me, and that's actually when we were right. It was pretty it was close tied, and then New York went on a run in like the mid to late first quarter and took the lead. And I can't remember, like, were we losing after the first quarter yesterday, or was it like
I think we were up by 3, if I'm not mistaken. Okay. I want to say it was like 25-22, maybe.
Yeah. Regardless, okay. Oh yeah, because they hit that shot at the end of the quarter. That's right. But regardless, we were doing well. They took Garland out. We fell behind, and then we ended up taking the lead again. But still, I don't know. I really think Bickerstaff needs to work on his rotations a little bit. And like, I know I'm nitpicky here. This is super nitpicky. And I also understand the quandaries he's in with like the lack of bigs right now and the lack of the 3. I mean, I had a conversation with someone at work today. Like, does Okoro even see the floor again? Like, the series? Like, he's been terrible. Like, he played, what, 2 minutes? 3 minutes in the game yesterday? Is he that, like, is he unplayable? Like, I would rather, it's really bad that I'm saying I'd rather have Chetty Osman out there than Okoro, right? I mean, I don't know. I don't know your thoughts on that, but I'm really liking what I saw in game two from the Cavs. The Knicks are clearly not 100%. Randall looks great in the first quarter and looks terrible the rest of the game because I think his legs are just not there, his ankles. And then Hart was terrible yesterday after the first, like, because his ankle was, he clearly probably shouldn't have played yesterday. But I'm happy with what happened yesterday. Obviously, this game, this series is going 7. I have no 6 or 7. There's no way either team's going to win the next 3. This is going 6 or 7. If I was a betting man, Mike, I would say this series is going 7.
Well, all right, let me respond to something. I'm going to start on the Knicks side of things and respond there. So I think what I've discovered here watching this series in 2 games is that I'm not really afraid of Julius Randle in any way, shape, or form. If he wants to shoot step back threes or he wants to try to bully ball his way to the rim, I'm not really that worried about what Randle is doing, in all honesty. Maybe Tibbs isn't worried about it either because he left him in the down 30 with 3 minutes to go to get out. I'm not sure why Jared Allen was in there either, but the fact that Randle was in there on a bad ankle with 3 minutes to go down 30 was very Tibbsy. That was quite a Tibbsy move to have him out there on the floor, and they're lucky that
by the way, did you see the excitement that was Robin Lopez scoring three straight baskets in crunch time?
Yeah, Lopez was thrilled. They hit, the crowd loved it.
They love that hook shot,
and just the way the guy moves. I mean, he moves like he looks like somebody's grandpa out there trying to move and run up and down the floor.
It would be like you. It would be like you trying to move up and down the floor, right, Mike?
I hope I would move better than him. I mean, he looks like he's like carrying around two tree trunks as he's moving. He just is. It's incredible that he's able to actually score out there. But yeah, Randle, I'm not afraid of Randle in any way. And at the same time, I feel like I'm deathly afraid of Brunson. Like Brunson seems like he can get to wherever he wants to go. He missed a lot of threes yesterday, but he kind of got what he wanted. Yeah. And I think he's probably going to be able to get what he wants, especially if you're talking about Okoro not getting very many minutes. So of the Knicks players, Brunson's really the only one I'm afraid of. RJ Barrett is terrible. I don't know what the guy does well. It seems like he's mediocre to below mediocre at everything. He doesn't shoot it well. He's not quick. He doesn't get to the hole. He's not a great passer. He doesn't really defend or rebound that well. He just is a very So I'm not afraid of Barrett in any way. Quickly's been terrible up until the last fourth quarter of the game when it was over. So I think the Cavs, man for man, are better. At the same time, they got to have somebody produce something off the bench. In game one, LeVert, I mean, these two games were the complete Caris LeVert
experience,
right? Game one, he's dribbling around a million times, taking bad shots, nothing going in, turning the ball over.
I will say this, Mike. Like, I was not thrilled when LeVert kept shooting, even though he was making them yesterday. I was like, oh, no, not again. Please stop.
No, I agree.
Please stop.
I know. Like, where's he going? What's he doing? Why is he driving in there? Why does he have to take 47 dribbles and then go in?
I equate his dribbling to, like, a drunk driver trying to get through traffic, like, at times. Like, he looks like he's drunk. He looks completely lost. Mike, like, it's terrible.
You just have no idea where he's going and why he's going there. Yeah, it's I don't know. I don't know what to make of him. But when he plays well, it makes a huge difference. So one of the notes I took during the game yesterday was, and I said this before the series when we were talking and we did our little, well, I guess maybe I did my preview.
Yeah, I didn't do it. I talked about how important
I talked, yeah, my Han Solo preview. I talked about how important I thought Garland was. I thought Garland had to have a big series because – even though I think Mitchell is better than Brunson, I think Brunson is going to produce at a level similar to what Mitchell can produce. I mean, Mitchell's the better player. I think Mitchell's going to be the better player throughout the series.
Yeah.
But Brunson is a very capable guy. And so I think what you have to do is you have to look at it and say, Garland has to clearly be the most dominant second guy. He has to be the better of the second guy in this series. And clearly yesterday he was, and in game one he wasn't. And then you need another random guy to produce. So whether that's Okoro coming back and making two or three threes, whether that's the LeVert game, whether that's Chetty off the bench, the Cavs I don't think are winning unless they get a 15-point performance out of somebody other than the big four. Somebody else has to be able to score and do something in order for this team to be able to win. They're not going to get enough with just their four guys. They need somebody else to produce something. So it's got to be some random guy that does something. So your candidates obviously are LeVert, Chetty, Okoro, Dean Wade. We haven't dusted off Lamar Stevens, but one of those guys has to have a decent game and produce something in order for the Cavs to win.
Do you know who had a quietly good game because he didn't play a lot of minutes? And I was glad to see him out on the floor. Danny Green.
I mean, I think Danny Green
he spreads the floor. He can hit a corner shot.
He's not afraid.
He goes after the rebounds. He has playoff experience. He's got two championships with San Antonio. Like, put him out there.
I don't mind seeing. I don't mind seeing Danny Green on the floor. I agree. It's not like any of the other choices are incredibly outstanding. They're just not.
Is Rubio done, Mike? Are we ready to say that
I don't see where you're going to play him, because you're always going to have one of Mitchell or Garland on the floor at all times. So that's the guy that is going to handle the ball. So you don't really need a quote backup point guard, because one of those two guys is going to have the ball. And Rubio just hasn't been nearly as impactful this season as he was before he tore his ACL last year. I mean, he's just, for whatever reason, I don't know if he's not quick enough, if he's not that whatever slight burst of athleticism that he lost has made it so that he's not effective. He just isn't as good, and he's not as impactful. And if we don't see any more Rubio, I won't be that sad. Now, you asked about, are we going to see more Okoro? I think we're going to see more Okoro, because
Is he starting on Friday?
I would say yes, just because you just had a good LeVert game. Are you going to have another one, two in a row? Are you willing to roll if you're Bickerstaff?
I argue that I start Osman anyways.
Yeah, maybe you do. And I'm not saying you'd be wrong, but I think Okoro is going to get another chance, because you're just cycling through which guy in which game is going to give us something. And you have no idea what any of those guys are going to give you on any given night. And so you're just going to cycle through. Okay, we started Osman tonight. He gave us 18 points and knocked down 3 for 6 from three. Great. The next night you start Osman and he goes 0 for 4 with 3 turnovers. So you just never know. And then he's going to obviously play a lot less minutes if he's not rolling. So I think all those guys are going to get a chance to fill that rando role and just be the guy that hopefully comes up with something that powers the Cavs to where they need to go. So as I was thinking about it, like I said, I thought Garland and some random bench guy was going to be the key to the Cavs being able to have success against the Knicks offensively. Garland's got to be good, and obviously he really was in game two, wasn't very good in game one, and then you got the random Caris LeVert game, which is why the Cavs won. And then the Cavs defense yesterday was just, it was as good as it's ever been. Garland was just tremendous defensively. He had multiple possessions where he was just turning guys, and somebody would go one way and he'd be right there chest to chest. And then they go the other way, he'd be right there chest to chest. And I thought he was particularly impressive. And then I thought as the game went on, Mobley just did Mobley stuff where he was just kind of always lurking and in the background, and all of a sudden he just would appear and block somebody's shot from behind or deter a 2-on-1 fast break where the Knicks didn't even go and attack. I think it was Brunson was bringing it up and it was 2-on-1, and he just looked and was like, oh, it's Mobley. Let's just pull it out and set it back up. And so those are the things that he does defensively that you can't really measure those things. Now, offensively, he was a mess in game one, and I thought he was a mess in the first half of game two. And then he started to kind of figure it out as the second half wore along, got some dunks, got some good looks inside. And they need him to be able to score. You can't win. They're not going to win games either with Evan Mobley scoring 8 points. He's got to do more than that offensively in order for the Cavs to be able to be successful. And when you look at Mobley's future, I know we've talked about it a million times, but the one thing that he lacks is that interior strength and that ability to be able to fend off a guy like Randall, who's going to just kind of bury his shoulder into Mobley's chest and can kind of move him back. So I think that's going to come as he matures and continues to work. And then the other thing that he has to do from an offensive standpoint is he's got to be able to shoot the ball. And whether that's just making the open catch and shoot 18 footers or extending his range back out to three, if he could shoot the ball, it would change the spacing dynamics of this team tremendously. If Mobley could step out and be a 35% 3-point shooter on high volume. So I think those are the two things when I'm watching him. He's incredible, but when you talk about where we think he can go, what his potential is, I think those are the things that he has to do. So those are my main takeaways from the series to this point. I think, as you said, it's hard to believe that this series is going to go anything less than 6 games. It just doesn't seem very likely. You can look at it and say, the Cavs, as you said, didn't play very well in game one and only lost by 3 and then turned around and turned up the defense, and all of a sudden they have a 20-point win that was really never in question after about midway through the second quarter and say, hey, maybe they can just continue that. But I think the Madison Square Garden crowd is going to be ready. I think the Knicks will probably be ready to play. Game three is going to be a really tough physical game, and it'll be interesting to see where
not
the Cavs...
Not only that, it's starting at 8:30 in New York, which means there are going to be some... People have been drinking.
They'll be juiced up.
They'll be a little juiced up.
They'll be juiced up. But I don't think the Cavs are going to be afraid of the moment. I don't sense that, especially Mitchell and Garland, I don't sense that those guys are going to be, are going to shirk that, you know, that moment. They're not going to be afraid to go in there and play. So I think the Cavs are going to get at least one in there, and who knows? They come out with the same level of defensive intensity. You never know. I think the Cavs are going to win this series, whether they win it in six or seven. I don't know, but I feel confident that after watching game two, that the solutions that the team needs are there. It's just a matter of can they get the right performances in the right moments, which I think they will.
All right, so we're in agreement that the Cavs are going to win this series, Mike?
Cavs are going to win the series.
Okay. Six or seven, Mike?
I'll say six.
Yeah, I'm agreeing. I'm saying six as well. All right. So let's move into the series that we're not going to talk that much about in the Eastern Conference. The Boston Celtics and the Atlanta Hawks. This is a sweep, right, Mike?
So my notes for this series, in my monologue yesterday, my first point was this series is over. That was my first point. So, yeah, I agree. Maybe Atlanta takes a game because Boston doesn't come out with a sense of urgency and Atlanta catches lightning in a bottle and plays well. So maybe you get the gentleman sweep of five games, but there's no way this series is going more than five. And then I think my other point from this series is what do the Hawks do with Trae Young? I mean, can you build a legitimate winning team around Trae Young and his deficiencies? He's just defensively – he's just atrocious. And offensively, I just don't think the guy's fun to play with. And as good of a passer as he is, I just think that I don't know what his future is. I don't know what his future is with Atlanta. I don't think you can build a championship team with him. I don't know who'd want to trade for him.
Well, I know that I'm sure you listened to the Simmons pod today. They were talking like
right.
Houston, that would be bad.
That would be bad.
San Antonio. And what was the other one? It was Houston, San Antonio, and then one other team. I don't remember what the other team was.
Wizards.
Oh, the Wizards. That's a Wizards right? move. And the Wizards fired their GM, so maybe they're trying to make a big splash. All right, Anthony Edwards, man. Anthony Edwards is on fire. The Denver Nuggets up one on Minnesota now with 7 minutes left in the game, Mike. So...
98-97, Ant-Man getting it done.
32 points for Anthony Edwards right now. So, anyways, so I don't think... Listen, this series is over. It's a wrap. No more of this, okay? It's over. It's done.
All right, let's move on.
All right, move on.
Let's move
okay,
on.
Okay, next series. Let's talk about the other one that didn't play tonight, and that would be the Sixers and the Nets. And the Sixers have obviously... They're up 2-0. You know, and they've looked pretty good. But the Nets have been feisty. I think the Nets are going to get a game, Mike. I think the Sixers are clearly going to win the series because I think the Sixers are better. But I think the Nets are definitely not going to get swept here, right? They're going to win a game.
This is the same series as the previous one. I mean, yes, maybe the Nets can get a game just like the Hawks because the Sixers fall asleep and don't play hard or whatever, or just kind of go through the motions in one game. But they're not going to win the series. And if you're the Nets, I just don't know that you have any answers for Embiid and what Philly can do. I think the questions in this series more amount to where is Philly at health-wise and mental capacity-wise as they come out of this series and head towards a showdown with the Celtics in round two. I mean, that's the big question, right? Coming in, it was, what does Harden look like? In game one, he looked great. Game two, he looked bad and didn't play well. And is he healthy? Is he in shape? I don't know. I don't trust his team. I just don't. We've been over it a million times. I just don't think that you can rely on James Harden in a playoff situation in crunch time against a real opponent to come through for you. And as great as Embiid has been, he hasn't been able to prove it over the course of a long playoff run that he's the guy, that you can put the ball in his hands and for 40 minutes or 42 minutes, like, you look around the league and all the best players are playing 40-plus minutes. So Embiid maybe can do that on a one-off, but if you need Embiid to play 40 minutes for two straight rounds, which they may need him to once they get to the next two, if they're going to play Boston and then they're going to play Milwaukee, you're going to need Embiid to play 40 minutes a night for those two series. And then going into the finals, does he have that? Does he have that in him? And I would tend to think no, but if he's playing at the level that he played during the regular season, then yeah. I mean, you got to look at, even with a diminished Harden, that version of Embiid is probably good enough that if he plays that well, he might be able to get him to the finals. But I just don't see him being able to sustain that over a long period of time. So Sixers are going to win this series in either 4 or 5, and then we'll see what happens when they get the Celtics in the next round.
All right. Last one. The Bucks and the Heat. And the zombie Heat, as they like to call them. Here's the question. Like, clearly, you know, the Heat won game one. Giannis got hurt. The Bucks won by a lot tonight. As you said before, the game was never in question at any point. I don't see how they rush Giannis back here. Like, right? Like, when there's no sense. Like,
the Bucks supporting cast has to be good enough to beat this Miami team, who lost, really, beyond Jimmy Butler, they lost their only real other dynamic offensive player and hero when he broke his hand, to be able to create shots for
himself. How did he break his hand? I may have missed this because I was not.
He dove like for a loose ball. He was diving for a loose ball.
And
it was like he slid
across. Playing game?
Yeah, and he slid across the floor. No, it was in game one.
Oh, was it in game one? Okay.
So he slid across the floor as he dove for this loose ball, and then he immediately like popped up and ran off the floor, ran into the locker room. Then they made him come back because, I don't know, there was no stoppage of play. And then he took a shot with the broken hand. But, I mean, without Hero, you're basically down to Butler is the only guy who really can create a ton of offense. And Bam is a really good player, but Bam still is not at the point where you just give him the ball and get out of the way and let him go do his work. Yeah. He's just not that kind of scorer. And then everybody else on Miami is limited in some way, where you're talking about Max Strus, you're talking about Gabe Vincent, you're talking about Lowry at
Zombie
this point
Kevin
in his career.
Love.
Like, they're just, yeah, they just don't have enough creativity, enough juice off the dribble to be able to deal with Milwaukee. And even without Giannis, this Bucks team should be able to win and take care of business. Again, it's kind of surprising that they didn't do that in game one, although sometimes when your star goes down and you kind of have that in the back of your mind, hey, is the guy going to be all right, or what's the deal, and you just don't play as well. So I would anticipate that Milwaukee's going to finish this series off relatively quickly, and I think the longer that they can sit Giannis, the better off they're going to be, because you don't want to be rushing him back and then have this be something that's kind of lingering in a series where it's going to be a lot more challenging. And I think, look, I'm not sure that the Cavs or the Knicks can give Milwaukee a really difficult series. I think the Cavs would provide a little bit more stiffer competition for Milwaukee than the Knicks would. But I don't think, if we're being honest with ourselves, I don't think that either one of us believe that if Milwaukee's truly healthy, that the Cavs are going to be able to beat the Bucks. But certainly, if you're talking about Milwaukee without Giannis, or with a Giannis that's 60% of a healthy guy, then maybe. Then you start opening up possibilities. So I think Milwaukee's going to be really cautious with them. And unless they get their backs up against the wall where Miami gets up and is a game away from clinching the series, I just don't see Giannis. There's no reason to rush him back, as you said.
Yeah. Milwaukee's winning this. Are they going to win it in five, or is it going to take six now because of the whole not having Giannis? Now they got to go to Miami. Is Miami going to win one at home with their 35 fans?
It all comes down
to 35 fans in the stands.
It all comes down to Jimmy Butler, right? I think it all comes down to Butler. Can Butler give you one or two more 35 to 40 point games to get you over the hump against a Bucks team without Giannis? I bet on maybe one more, so I think it probably goes six.
Okay. All right. I agree. All right. So now we're going to move to the Western Conference, Mike. And I think let's start with the series that you're probably most excited about. The Sacramento Kings and the Golden State Warriors. Because your prediction seemingly is coming true so far, that Golden State is washed. The whole Draymond Green is now suspended for the next game. I don't see any way that Golden State's winning this series, right? Light the beam, baby.
You can see a way that clearly there's a way that they can win, but do I think that's what's going to happen? I really don't. When you look at Sacramento in this series, they have been phenomenal. De'Aaron Fox and Malik Monk have both been just lights out. Fox is just the guy's orchestrating everything. Nobody can stay in front of him. The floater that he's been hitting all year, Golden State just has nobody who can deal with him. Defensively, yeah. Golden State does not have enough defenders to be able to deal with the offensive weapons that Sacramento has. And I think that this series, going into it, people thought it was going to come down to, can Sacramento defend Golden State enough to be able to allow their offense to do what they do and outscore Golden State? Can they give just enough resistance that they can score so that they can beat the Warriors? And that's exactly what's happened. The offense for Sacramento has continued to hum just like it did in the regular season. And defensively, they've been able to put up just enough of a fight to make it difficult for the Warriors to be able to score. And look, Wiggins is coming back after having sat out for 2 months. Jordan Poole, I don't know, is he hurt? Is he just playing poorly? He's been bad, let's just put it that way. And even when he's at his best, he's really a kind of one-dimensional player. Maybe. And I just don't think, look, my notes on this game or this series were De'Aaron Fox has been awesome and Steph has been awesome. Some of the shots that Steph's hit in this series, both the jumpers, he had the one in the corner that basically went over the backboard. I mean, that shot was incredible. I mean, he's falling out of bounds and he basically shoots it up towards the ceiling. That shot was incredible. And he's also had some incredible finishes on drives. He's incredible to watch. I mean, I despise the Warriors just for what they are when we talk about competing against the Cavs, but there's no way you can't appreciate the basketball brilliance of what Steph is. When you watch him move without the ball and do the things that he does, any basketball player out there, I don't care what level you are, if you could emulate the things that Steph Curry does, and I'm not talking about his shooting, I'm just talking about the way he moves on the court, it's basically a textbook on how to play basketball when you have the ball and when you don't have the ball. Yep. There's so many guys that could learn from the way he plays. So Steph is as good as he's ever been. And I just don't think that his other teammates are up to the same level. Klay obviously is coming back off two major injuries. He's been, I think, way better than anybody would have thought. I didn't think he would ever get back to this level that he's playing at now. But he's not the Klay Thompson that he was before. And you can't expect him to be. No. He's not going to be as good defensively. He doesn't move as well. And he shoots it as a standstill shooter still pretty well. But once he has to put it on the floor, his effectiveness is obviously limited. And then Draymond has become more and more and more one-dimensional as his career has worn on, where now he doesn't really even look at the basket ever. He's always just looking to facilitate. And he's still one of the most impactful defenders in the game, but I would still argue that he's probably lost a quarter of a step there as well.
Is that because
and now
he's
losing
on
him for all of game three. That's right. That's the step he's lost. He gave it to Sabonis instead. I don't know. Like, look, don't like Draymond Green. I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of the way he conducts himself. And but yet at the same time, I look at that play and why is Sabonis wrapping up his leg? And in Draymond's defense, if you're trying to run down the floor, they're getting up from that entanglement and a guy's grabbing my foot and I'm trying to run down the court and get back on defense. He stopped him a little bit harder probably than was necessary, but I'm not really 100% sure.
He literally looked like he was
not really 100% sure.
He literally looked like he was Stone Cold Steve Austin kicking him in the corner.
But at the same time,
I get it. I know what you're saying.
Put yourself into that position, right? Put yourself there where somebody is grabbing a hold of your leg as you're trying to run down the floor, and there's obviously competitive fire going at that point. I'm not condoning what he did. I still think that the suspension is warranted.
I think you're trying to get some Draymond Green publicity going on here, Mike. I think you're really liking him now. I think you're changing your tune.
No. I just don't know what he's supposed to do. Look, did he add a little flavor to it? Sure. But
here's my problem.
If a guy's grabbing your leg and you run down the floor, it's just – plus then the way he acted afterwards. Did you see the video?
And you know Adam Silver was in the stadium, right?
Right. Did you see the video where it was some guy in the stands that was filming? He was on the side by the Warriors bench where Draymond was yelling. So he was probably, I would guess, like halfway up the first section. And so he had the video out, and he was videoing Draymond, you know, screaming at the fans. And then after that tirade was kind of over, then he panned across the arena to Adam Silver standing there, and Adam Silver was like bent over talking to somebody, and you know, and so it was kind of interesting. And the league pretty much admitted that because it was Draymond, had it been some other player, that the punishment might not nearly have been what it was. Maybe he would have just got fined, or maybe they just would have left it at the ejection. But look, when you're a clown, then that follows you around and you have a reputation as a clown. It's going to cost you. And in this case, it's cost Draymond. And I would guess that, you know, Golden State's obviously way better at home, but I think Sacramento is going to get one of these two games. And I honestly think this series is over in five games. I just don't think that Golden State has the firepower. It sounds insane to say, but I just don't think Golden State has the firepower to be able to deal with what Sacramento can throw at them. Sacramento's not going to – you're not stopping them, at least not Golden State. Golden State is not stopping the Sacramento Kings from scoring, which means that the Warriors have to score a ton of points, and they just don't have the personnel to be able to do that right now. So I say Kings in five.
Yep. It sounds about right to me, Mike. Quick update. Denver's up 7 with 2.5 left. So, well.
Kudos for Minnesota fighting back. And it's good to see Anthony Edwards playing well.
He's at 36
after
now.
After he had that terrible game in the play-in against the Lakers, you know, I think people kind of got down on him. But, man, that guy's – he's good. He is good.
Yep. All right.
However, there are clowns. There are clowns everywhere in Minnesota. Minnesota has two clowns of their own.
Rudy Gobert is a clown.
Rudy's a clown, and Towns is a clown. To me, Towns is in the Trae Young. He's in the Trae Young category. I would never in a million years would I trade for that guy or want him on my team. Never, never. I know he's got talent. I know he can shoot. I know all the good things that he does.
Yeah.
But he is not a winning basketball. He's not a winning basketball player. Yeah. He's just not.
All right. Let's talk Suns. Clippers. This is a fun series, Mike. I like this series.
It's a good series.
I think, man, Paul George not being able to play. Like, I just look at how the Clippers are playing. They're playing so well, but if they just had another guy out there, like, I think this would be like an all-timer. This is still a great series. Like, it's really, really good. I mean, Simmons was talking about how it's the mid-range clinic, the kings of the mid-range, Paul, Kawhi, and Durant. Like, it's a really, really good series.
Booker was the king in this game.
Yeah. I think that the Suns are going to end up walking away as the victors. Oh, Anthony Edwards, that's beautiful. I think the Suns are going to walk away as the victors in this series. But I think it's going to go six. I think it's going to go – it might go the distance, Mike. It might go seven. I'm going to go Suns in six on this one. I just don't think the Clippers have enough offense to do it. I just don't.
All right, so I'm going to say Clippers in seven. And I just look at what Kawhi has done in this series. So he had 38 in game one and he had 31 in game two. And I think – I don't want to speak for anybody else, but I feel like I forgot how good Kawhi is and just how strong the guy is. And he's, to me, one of the defense-is-irrelevant guys in the league where I don't care who you put on him. I don't care what you try to do to him, what scheme you want to put in front of him. He just kind of works his way and bulls his way to where he wants to go, and then he just elevates and shoots over guys. And he's just so, so strong. And his shooting has gotten to be so good that I just don't know how you deal with him. And then at the other end, whoever he's been on defensively, he's kind of locked him up. He's done a really good job during the time that he's been on Durant. And I do think that your point is well taken that the Clippers are a guy short. Like, if you put Paul George back out there, clearly you add a guy who's arguably a top 15 player in the league. You put that guy back on a team, he's going to make you better. And they're certainly going to miss him. But I feel like the Clippers' depth as this series goes on, and you've got Booker and Paul and Durant all playing 40-plus minutes, especially when you start thinking about Chris Paul and KD, that they're going to get worn down eventually. That's why I don't think this team is a legit title contender, kind of the same way I look at Philadelphia. I think that the minutes that these guys are going to have to log in order to be able to get to where they want to go, I think the minutes load is going to be too high for them. It's kind of like the Cavs, right? This team is built in a similar way to the Cavaliers in that Phoenix doesn't have a lot of players off the bench that they can count on. Now, Torrey Craig's played well in these first two games, but would anybody be surprised if Torrey Craig scores 2 points apiece in the next couple games? I wouldn't be. And so, yeah, their top four are going to get it done night in and night out, but eventually you're going to need some bench production. I think that the Clippers bench has been and will continue to be much stronger. And then if the game's close down the stretch, I trust Kawhi. Not that I don't trust Booker or Paul or Kevin Durant. Those guys all have really long track records of success. But I don't know. I just have a feeling. I've liked watching the Clippers. I've even liked watching Russ. Like, you forget when Russ has been in all these weird situations. So it's easy to make fun of his shooting and it's easy to make fun of his decisions. But the reality is, when you watch the guy play, there aren't five more guys in the entire league that are more athletic than he is. That when he's going full speed, he just explodes the basket, or he just rises up to block a shot, or he gets to a loose ball. His athleticism, even in the NBA, just leaps off the screen at you. And you hope that the 90% of what's good about Russ outweighs the 10% of what's bad about him. And clearly, there's clearly been lots of games and seasons where it hasn't. The bad has not been outweighed by the good. But in these first two games, I don't think you can say anything except that he's been a net positive. Despite the 3-for-19 shooting in game one, he was still super impactful in that game with the offensive rebounding and the defense and just the things that he did, the two free throws down the end of the stretch of game one. So I just think that Kawhi and the depth are why I'm going Clippers in seven. I just think that when push comes to shove, that you start getting in close games with a guy that and a team that hasn't played together for very long, I like the team that has a little bit more continuity. That's why I'm going with the Clippers.
Okay. I'm just shaking my head, Mike. Hawk. This Denver game. Denver's going to win.
Jokic didn't get to 25?
No, he did. Aaron Gordon needed to get over 12.5, and he's sitting at 12 points with 11 seconds left. Oh, man.
See, you're addicted now. Pretty soon what you're going to be doing is, I can already tell what's going to happen. When we're doing podcasts next fall, you're going to have Kenny Pickett to have over 17 completions, and the Browns are going to win, and you're going to be like, oh, this is terrible. Kenny Pickett just would have had two more passes, I'd have made $1.25. I can already see it, man. I could see it.
I would have won $47 if you give half of a point, son of a gun. Anyways,
right, well, hey.
It is what it is, Mike. It is what it is.
All right. It is what
it is. I got my LeBron 25-point bet tonight. Let's go to that series. There we go.
Okay.
LeBron, Memphis. Memphis, obviously, out without Ja Morant, wins tonight. Lakers are right there most of the game. Especially late, they came back. They were way behind, and they came back. LeBron looked good. Davis looked good. The role players didn't play that well. Listen, here's what I don't like. I know that you're not the biggest LeBron fan, right, Mike? At this point, you respect him, but you're not like you're not stumping for LeBron. Okay,
I'm not stumping for LeBron. Well, I'm definitely not. I'm not excitedly rooting for the Lakers. Let's put it that way.
Let me see if I can find it real quick. I just saw it. This is what Dylan Brooks had to say after the game. You know, you saw him staring down LeBron after that one shot he made. Congrats, Dylan Brooks.
They're clowns
Dylan
everywhere.
Brooks, Memphis, I don't care.
Memphis has some clowns.
Listen, you want to know what's going to happen in game three. Just ready. I don't care. He's old. I don't respect no one until they come and give me 40. This is what this guy said. We're in this freaking ridiculous chain that has DB on it. You just wait what happens. You know what's going to happen in game three, Mike. You know what's going to happen, right?
You think he's going to get 40?
LeBron's going to try his damnedest to get to 40. You know it.
All right. So, look, Dylan Brooks is a complete clown. I don't think there's any question about that. There's no – in no way, shape, or form in any universe would I ever support Dylan Brooks over LeBron James. It's just that's completely nonsensical. And yet, at the same time, I think that – after game one, that if you listen to many of the national media podcasts that you and I listen to, and I did some reading as well, that there's a lot of Lakers love out there. There's a lot of the path is clear for the Lakers to make it to the NBA Finals. The West is down. LeBron and AD, they can do it, and they're going to make it. And I just think that I don't see it. Look, you can discount the injury part of it. Even if you give these two guys perfect health, I just don't see where this team is. They're not in any way, shape, or form a dominant team. They almost lose to Minnesota in the play-in. They win game one of this series. They lose game two to a team without their star player. In no way are the Los Angeles Lakers a juggernaut. I watched tonight in key possessions down the stretch of tonight's game where LeBron just kicks the ball and is like, all right, man, go to work, Austin Reeves. Go to work, Hachimura. That, to me, is not a formula for a team that's going to make the NBA Finals. And, look, I think that you can swing it both ways. I mean, part of the Dylan Brooks and Memphis Grizzly experience is this cartoonish behavior, and whether you want to call it cockiness, attitude, whatever. And I think you wonder, do they let that get in the way, or does that carry them to places that they want, that maybe they wouldn't be able to go without it? And I don't know the answer to that question, but I think if you're looking at this series, I don't think that it's as done of a deal as everybody thinks. Look, Memphis, go back to the preseason, right? And think about what we and everybody else said. Memphis last season was a 2 seed. Was there anybody anywhere that thought Memphis was going to be a 2 seed again this year? Was there?
I don't know.
No, there wasn't.
No, I don't think so.
No, I mean, maybe you could find somebody somewhere, but most people thought Memphis was going to drop, and they didn't. And I think there's a toughness about this team. And granted, they don't have Steven Adams. They lost Brandon Clark to the torn Achilles. Jaws with his green hair and his hat on the sideline. I don't know about you, but I can't look at Jaw anymore in any way, shape, or form the same way I looked at him prior to all this stuff coming out. Like, now I see it, I'm like, he's almost fitting into the clown.
Memphis,
he's almost fitting into the clown.
How many clowns does Memphis have? Okay, let's count them. There's Dylan Brooks, Ja Morant.
Yep.
I'm not putting Jaren Jackson there.
I think those are the...
I'm not putting Desmond Bane there.
I think those are the two guys that I think fit into the clown category. I like Taylor Jenkins as their coach. I think he does a good job, and I don't think that's an easy team to coach. Let's put it that way. I don't think it's an easy team to coach. I think there's some strange personalities, and obviously there's some strange goings on with Ja. So I think for them to be able to hold it together and be a two seed, I think Memphis is going to win this series. I really do. I think Memphis is probably going to go seven, but I think the Grizzlies are going to win this series because I just think that what they can do, and
Lakers are winning this series.
All right. What do you have? Lakers in what?
Six.
Lakers in six. All right. I got Memphis in five. Or Memphis in seven. Sorry, Memphis in seven.
Someone.
All right, we got two disagreements in a row.
Someone tweeted a picture of, remember when Dylan Brooks thought it was a good idea to punch Donovan Mitchell in the balls?
Yeah, there's not much to say. Even if I would venture to guess that even if you're a fan of the Memphis Grizzlies, you're probably not that big of a fan of Dylan Brooks. I know he brings things to the table. I know he's a good defender. I know he's feisty. I know every team needs guys like that, but I don't like guys like that that have an overabundance of confidence in themselves as an offensive player or a LeBron stopper.
Yeah.
Or whatever it might be. Bring your toughness, but keep your mouth closed.
Okay. All right. Last series. I don't think we need to spend too long on this. Denver's winning this series. It's over. It's done. Minnesota might steal a game. Kudos to them tonight. Murray scored 42, I think, or more than 40 tonight. Anthony Edwards was just as good. They just didn't have another answer. For them, I mean, Jokic was phenomenal. His passing was great. He just does a little bit of everything. This series is over. I don't know how much you want to spend on this. Denver looks okay. Doesn't look great, but looks good enough. They're gonna get through this series and then see who awaits them from the Memphis Lakers series, I guess.
So before this, well, they're not getting the winner of that series. They're getting the winner of Suns Clippers.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right. I apologize. So
they're getting the winner of Suns Clippers, whichever team comes out of there, that's going to be a heck of a series. So before this game two tonight, I said my 2 points were series is over and the disaster that is Rudy Gobert. Those are my 2 points after game one. I think now after having seen game two, clearly the series is still over. And I think now you start looking at it and you say, what does Minnesota do in the offseason? Kind of like the Trae Young situation. Obviously, the guy that you're going to build around, the guy that is your franchise centerpiece, is Anthony Edwards. And you went out and got Rudy Gobert, and you still have Towns. I think you can make a pretty compelling argument that I'd cut bait on both of those guys and just try to get role players back for them that fit better around Anthony Edwards. I mean, to me, neither one of those guys is somebody that long-term I'd want to pair with Anthony Edwards after I've watched this for a season and what's going to be one playoff series. I think Minnesota would do well to just ship those two guys out and get back whatever they can and then try to build your team completely around, well, what does Edwards do well? What do we need to surround him with in order to maximize what he can be as a player? Because I talked about Westbrook's athleticism jumping off the screen. Anthony Edwards as an athlete jumps off the screen. I mean, he's so big. He's so fast. He's so powerful and explosive. He's a guy that's really fun to watch just because of he has something that a lot of other guys don't have. So you got to build your team around Edwards. And then on the Denver side, it's sort of put up or shut up for Denver. Number one seed, the West is pretty wide open. Jokic has won two straight MVPs. Jamal Murray rounded back into form. Their starting five has been as good as any starting five in the NBA. They have home court advantage throughout the Western Conference playoffs. You got the altitude. Everything is set up. Denver couldn't ask for it to be set up anymore. And so I think this is sort of a referendum, not necessarily on Jokic or Denver, but it's just more that things are set up really well for them. And they should make the NBA Finals. I mean, they should win whatever series you want to throw in front of them. You have the two-time reigning MVP. You have the number one seeded team in the conference around him. Those guys are good players. If they stay healthy, I think anything less than a finals appearance for Denver is a huge, huge disappointment.
Well, they're going to be disappointed, Mike.
Who do you think's getting out of the West?
Well, let's make our predictions.
All right. Let's go through the series and kind of work our way. Wow. So who do you have in next in round two? Who's matching up in round two? So I have Clippers, Nuggets, Grizzlies, Kings. Then I would go Kings, Nuggets, then I would go Nuggets to make the NBA Finals. That's what I would do in the West.
Okay. I have Nuggets, Suns, Kings, Lakers. I have Kings, Nuggets, Light the Beam, baby. I'm buying in.
Look, it's not crazy. It's not crazy.
It is crazy.
Having watched these first two games,
it's completely crazy. The team hasn't been.
It's not crazy though. If you've watched this team play, it's not crazy. They have good players. They are legitimately, from an offensive standpoint, they're really, really difficult to guard because nobody can stay in front of De'Aaron Fox and the way he's shooting the ball. He just makes everything go, and then obviously Sabonis has the things that he does well around the block and then with the dribble handoff game and all the actions that they can put teams through. And they just have talented players that are running
and they got the
a
coach
really
of the
good
year,
offensive
baby.
System. So they got the coach of the year. Look, I don't think it's crazy. I don't think it's crazy that Sacramento wins the West.
Light
but
the beam.
I'm going to stick with Denver over Sacramento.
Okay.
All right, that's fine.
Eastern Conference.
Are we doing the same thing in the East?
Yeah, okay. So I'll go first this time. I got Milwaukee and Cleveland. Okay. And then I've got the Sixers and Boston. Really bold predictions going on in the Eastern Conference. I am going to go with Milwaukee and the Sixers.
Wow.
And then I'm going to go with Milwaukee out of the East.
All right, so you have a Milwaukee, Sacramento, the NBA's dream media markets in the finals.
Well,
I
wanted to say Cleveland, but I don't have faith yet. Get
nah,
me next week.
You can't do it. You can't do that.
Well, listen, my 25 cents.
Let's get through. Let's get through this. Let's get through this Knicks series, and then maybe we can start talking about how we can upset Milwaukee. All right, so I would have Cavs, Bucks, and Sixers, Celtics. Celtics over the Sixers. Bucks over the Cavs. Bucks over the Sixers. So I said it at the beginning of the season. I'm sticking with it. Bucks Nuggets was my preseason finals pick, and that's still where I'm at. And I still think it's probably, in all honesty, it's probably the most realistic finals matchup. Now, the probabilities are still pretty low considering all the chaos that we still have left. But to me, I think Bucks Nuggets is the one that makes the most sense. So,
all right. Anything else, Mike?
I think we're good. I think we hit on everything and got to try out our new platform here.
Didn't fail us at all.
Well, we don't know if it failed. We don't know if it failed.
Mine says I'm 85% uploaded, so that's a good sign.
Mine says I'm 99% uploaded, so I'm not sure what that. Why you've been sort of steadily in the mid 80s, and I've been in the 99 the whole
both?
Time.
Can
so
you
we'll see
both
happens,
of ours when you're doing it?
I see both. Yeah, you can't.
No, I only see mine.
Okay. Yeah. So I can see everybody, I think. So, and I think it's supposed to give me some messages about like if somebody's audio is having problems or what's going on. But anyway, not that anybody cares about the back office production of the podcast. But all that being said, thanks for checking out tonight's NBA episode. I know for a fact that the audio quality is going to be much better than my solo rant that I put out yesterday. So if you want to get my takes, make sure, well, I guess you already listened to this episode as opposed to the old one. So don't go back and listen to the previous episode because the audio quality was a little bit lower than it was tonight. So again, Jay, welcome back. Good to have you back. I'm glad that I don't have to just go and talk to myself. Not nearly as much fun. But to everyone out there, hopefully you enjoyed this one, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the portfolio guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your coaching portfolio guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast presented by Head Start Basketball.